This is episode number 39 of Technology and Choice, where we talk about almost anything, because we can, from the perspective of technology and choice. I'm your host, John Ferguson. What do we mean by that? Technology and choice. It really is all about knowledge, with the purpose of leveraging our influence on the world. That is what technology essentially is. It has many forms, it has many manifestations, but it all boils back down to knowledge. And not just the new cutting-edge stuff. This is the knowledge, the technology that goes back to the beginning of time and kind of builds forward. And choice, what is that? Well, you know, I more recently found a way of representing it. What are we leveraging with our knowledge? Well, we're leveraging our choices, the effects our choices have. I just recently had the realization this is the lowest common denominator of knowledge, actionable knowledge, that we know belongs to everybody. And that is simply the knowledge I am. Who, what, where, all of those things can be questioned. But if you are there, you go, I am. And it's very philosophical, but it's also something we can all focus on and honor in each other. And technology affects our choices affect technology, and the nature of how we view choice affects it all. And so we talk about anything, and today I'm really delighted to have back on Paul Rosenberg, who was with us in the fourth episode of Technology and Choice. Paul knows a lot about a lot of things and has done a lot of things. He's a lifestyle capitalist with a broad range of interests, philosophy, theology, history, psychology, and physics, and has been involved in cryptography projects since the 90s. Paul's diverse interest base is reflected in his extensive repertoire of published titles, including A Lodging of Wayfaring Men, Production Versus Plunder, and The Breaking Dawn, not to mention 55 engineering and construction books. He also participated in writing the standards for fiber optic installation. His accomplishments go on too long to cover here. To the point, he's the author of freemansperspective.com, and I really highly recommend that you subscribe to his weekly free newsletter. And if you like his style, spring for an annual subscription to access his full awesomeness, because he's a man of great depth and talent. So let's talk to him. Welcome, Paul.
Oh, thanks for having me.
It's really good. I follow you on a few other things where you talk, and I'm just really delighted to have you on, especially after reading your one of your recent articles where you you talk about rebranding Freeman's Perspective to add parallel society to the title and orientation. I was really glad to see you being encouraged about the future, and you know, I really feel that way myself. There's a lot happening, a lot of scary stuff, but also if you look through it, things look very positive. So if you could tell us about Freeman's Perspective, kind of what you've been doing, where it's been, and what's the new angle? Where are we going with this rebranding?
Sure. Freeman's Perspective actually began in 2011. And I'd been doing various writing and projects for years and had lots and lots of notes that I had accumulated of really interesting things. And I said, you know what, it's time. I need to do a newsletter. And I had a kind of ridiculously high standard for the newsletter, which was that every issue of the subscription letter, that is, every issue had to be something I had never seen written about before, something that was important, and something that would move humanity forward in some way. Now, like I say, that's a crazy high standard, but I was happy that we did it, and we ultimately published 100 issues till I really kind of ran out of content. I'm a little surprised we got to go that long, but new things kept popping up. And so we did, and finally got to the point where I said, you know what, I can't keep doing this without lowering the quality, so I'm not going to do that. And just at that time, it became really obvious that we needed to move into a more forward direction, building really a parallel society. That idea comes from a bunch of places, but one of the best little quotes on it was from Bucky Fuller, who said that if you want to change things, don't fight the existing. Build a new model and make the old one obsolete. And that is entirely correct. And so that's what we're doing. We're working on building a parallel society, a new way, ways around the existing that are better, and that eventually make the existing obsolete. And that's what we're working on, nonstop now.
What all does that involve? The newsletter's rebranding. So what kind of things are you going to be putting forward and talking about in your newsletter?
Oh, we'll be talking about everything that really is, or even might be, a parallel route. In the old fiber optic business, we used to call it an overbuild. There's a cable line, and we're going to overbuild a fiber line over the top of it. We're overbuilding an archaic and enforced culture, an old way of doing things. And what I mean is, let's take homeschooling for an example. Pretty much nobody thinks that government schools are the best choice for their kids. There are some exceptions somewhere. But even people who have their children in government schools, which is millions, they really think that a private school might be better. A lot of people think that homeschooling would be better, but they just, can't do it. They don't have the time. They don't have the resources, whatever. Just about nobody thinks that government schools are the very best thing for their kids. So we're overbuilding it. And we are and have been advocating homeschooling. The whole homeschooling is really a much broader field now than it used to be, but we're advocating the whole thing. We're big into cryptocurrencies and encryption and a parallel economic system, a parallel economic avenues that people can take to get around to put it politely, a rigged system of national currencies, and so on and so forth. Those are the things we're looking at and we are promoting.
So you haven't gotten that first, you haven't done that transition letter yet, right?
Oh, no. The first one was out a couple weeks ago.
I missed it.
Yeah, the first one was out a couple weeks ago, and it's called Biology in Our Hands. And it has to do with biohacking and with independent biology, which is astonishing right now, what's going on. It turns out that, I don't have the exact date in front of me, but let's say 15 years ago, the cost of sequencing an entire human genome was $100 million. Now,
right. I remember when that was first done. It was like amazing.
It was an incredible thing.
It was a result of years of research and hundreds of people working on it. Yeah.
Right. Now you can do it for $1,000.
Wow.
I mean, it's stunning. We all know this because we've all seen, I think most of us have seen, the ads for these services. For $100, you send them $100 and a swab of your cheek, and they tell you exactly where your ancestors came from. What they're doing is they're sequencing your DNA and reading it and telling you what it is. Now, they don't have to do the whole genome. They pick a few spots, and that's enough for them to make that determination.
Right.
But for $100, I mean, this is real DNA sequencing to tell you really for true exactly where your genes came from. And so, as it turns out, this is in a gigantic field that's just opening, and it's incredible what's going to come of it. There are something like 4,000 diseases that are caused by a defect in one particular gene, and all of them can be fixed. It's not even terribly hard. I mean, it's tricky. Biology is always tricky. But given that, it's just not that hard. You can do it in a small lab. You can actually, believe it or not, splice genes at your kitchen table. Not human genes, but you can splice them at your kitchen table.
Wow.
Yeah.
Boy, I was going to kind of move on from that, but you got to tell me what you mean by that.
Oh, sure. We had, so far as we know, It was the first one of its kind. We called it a CRISPR party. CRISPR is the technology that splices genes very, very effectively and cheaply. What is the proper, it's CRISPR, which stands for, let's see if I can get this right, clustered randomly interspaced palindromic repeats. Say that 10 times.
Okay, yeah, really. Say it once.
But what it is it's a real easy way to splice genes. As it turns in, it was discovered in a yogurt lab, of all places.
Wow.
Who knew? But as it turns out, that there are these markers on the side rails of DNA. They're tiny little enzymes, but they're like addresses. And when nobody knew. And
wow.
They're addresses, and then there's these other molecules that they find inside of cells that read the addresses and clip the DNA at that spot. And people found out, it took, some years and a lot of intense research, but found out you can get these things to pick any address and to cut the DNA where you want it to. And so what you do is you pick that spot, clip the DNA, and put some of the replacement that you want, which kind of floats into place by normal cellular processes, and boom, you splice the gene.
Wow.
And you can prove it. We bought a kit for $400, and I think we had 10 people splicing genes, and it worked because you got a very simple and safe bacteria to grow where it had no business of growing, and the only way it could do it is if you splice the genes.
That's remarkable.
It's insane. Yeah.
Now, boy, so things like that is that is cool.
Yep.
If you can keep up that level of wow in your newsletter, that's really something. And it is very interesting because we talked about cryptography generally and cryptocurrency, and I'm all over many of those things. I have another podcast about the Safe Network, developing technology. Amazing stuff. But, I was going to talk about some of those, but by bringing that up, you put the big question on the table, because we have all of these technologies for levering our choices and influencing the world. Do we have technology for, what should we do and shouldn't we do? That's an interesting question, isn't it?
Oh, it is. It's a gigantic question.
Because who
should decide?
Yeah, well, you start talking about being able to sequence genes. Perhaps that's largely the cultural thing, but there's, very real possibilities that could have some very wild results and things that we might not want, paths we might not want to go down. That's a bit of the conservative in me going, but hey,
here's my general answer to that. And the answer is there's several parts, but part of the answer is yes, somebody eventually will do something nasty. And, there's nothing you can really do about it because any tool can be, you can kill a guy with a hammer. Any tool can be abused. But the truth is that the people we really need to worry about are the guys who make chemical weapons.
Right.
Those are the ones that we want to keep away from new technology. I mean, seriously, it sounds, funny, and it is funny in a way.
Well, how do you go about doing that? That all gets into many different avenues that I think would be fun to explore.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I agree. Keep it away from the people who are already doing stuff, And I guess
right.
That has to do with distributing responsibility more broadly, so that that's something that's one of the reasons why I dove all the way to the simplicity of choice and what is choice based upon. I don't know ultimately from a universal perspective, but I know the lowest common denominator is I am, and I figure if we recognize that in ourselves and others and keep that concept to the fore, then we go, oh, yes, I am. And, so are you. And then we get into that actually gets into philosophical, religious, and spiritual realms. But by golly, it's right there in front of us every moment when we go, oh, well, I may not really have a good idea of who I am, where I am, what I am. I do know that I am. So how do we build from there? Anyway, that's right. That's the saw I like to play. And I throw it up to interact here.
Isn't it interesting that if you take such a simple moral statement as I am, if you take it seriously, from it comes I am, and then you are as well. And I should treat you as if you are just the same as I am. And from that springs an entire moral system that's consistent from end to end if you follow it through and take it seriously. And the only problem with it is that the powers that be won't like it because it displaces them. What it really is the future invading the present. And that's a brilliant place to start. I am.
Right. Well, I kind of backed into that with this podcast. I didn't realize where I was going completely. I selected that pair of concepts because it gave me a broad ability to talk about all the kinds of things I want to talk about. And I guess I maybe in my gut knew, but it keeps boiling back down to that. And it's really, you said something there I want to bring up. I don't see it as necessarily a point, a moral statement. It's an observable fact that if we focus on it as a factual thing, I don't know where it goes. But, yes, you can look at it morally, but it's also experiential. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I get, unless it's just me, the solipsism of, well, I'm creating you too, and so it's like, yeah, it's all in my head. That's all fine. We can bypass that particular loop. But it right. implies the rest of the things from which morals proceed. In other words, mm-hmm. the do unto others as you would have them do unto you.
Right, which really is nothing but except self-reference extended with empathy.
Right, right.
And if the other person is, I am just the same as you, I am, then there goes your empathy right there. You got it.
Exactly. And that, I'm sorry, boy, you're the perfect person to draw these things out. I had a recent realization in hearing, it actually had to do with somebody, with a tech company, adopting a code of conduct based upon, or that actually was, I can't remember the name of it, but it was the one, it was basically a religious code. And the second one being love thy neighbor as thyself. And I thought that was really cool that, it made the social justice warriors' heads explode that they should adopt such a thing, but which I think is all wonderful. That's all kind of peripheral to the fact that I've always had a problem with that. Love thy neighbor as thyself. What if I treat myself badly? What if I really dislike myself? Does that mean I dislike others? And I started looking at that and I realized that there's something missing in the translation. And if you drop one word, it takes on a whole new perspective. Is it love thy neighbor as self?
Mm-hmm.
They have, I don't even go ahead and define that more clearly, but they whether you think of them as separate or not, love them as self, and we all share that. Anyway, I hadn't planned on going there, but I wanted, since it came up, I dropped it on the table. So this gets back into, we have all of these options in terms of the technology to build, whether we alter what we have or build something in parallel and let the other wither, which is, I think, the basic point. Sometimes you have to fight it just because they're storming the ramparts and you have to go, look, stay away.
Right. Occasionally you have no choice.
Right. Right. But let's focus on creating the good rather than fighting the bad, except where we just have to.
Yeah, there's, maybe a couple times in the period of someone's life, maybe, where you really have to, do something with actual force. And, okay, that sucks. And if you have to do it, you do it. And then you're done and go back to normal life, which is to create.
Right, exactly. Exactly. Well, all right. Wow. So I actually want to get to any other ideas. Well, those are going to be coming out in your newsletters. So do you have any sampling of what other kinds of topics you're planning to cover, or is it pretty much unlimited?
Well, it's pretty much unlimited by anything that will actually tend to build the future. We'll obviously be talking about cryptography, because what cryptography does is it sets apart a separate realm that the lords of the old system can't invade. Cryptography is just math, and you can't cut math with a sword. And unless you somehow corrupt the application, which is possible, they just can't break cryptography. And what it does is it gives us city walls. It gives us a barricade behind which we can begin to create the world anew. And so cryptography, I think, is of extreme importance. We'll also be talking about anonymity, which is also very important, particularly when using the existing internet, which is surveilled end-to-end. So we'll be obviously talking about those things from time to time, dark nets and things like that. We'll be talking about really anything we can do, drones and autonomous delivery systems and whatever we've got, whatever comes up, whatever we can find. Hell, new ways to distribute art. It's really art right now. I mean that in a very broad sense. Is really at in a messy, nasty stage. Publishing is a mess. Publishing music. How do you make a living as a musician without going through this corporate model, which is really rotten? Who really believes that some 20-year-old model is the best musician in the world? Give me a break.
Right.
But that's what the Hollywood group is pumping out. And culture is important to us. And we're going to have to develop our own, because the existing one is just a mess. It's not that there aren't good artists out there. They exist. But getting through this existing system, which is designed to, it's designed to squeeze parents' money out of teenagers. It's just an ugly sort of mess. And if we can find ways to rebuild that better, we're going to be all over that as well.
Well, this brings up a really good topic that, I've been more and more aware of it, and I'm not sure where it's going, but obviously all of what we experience in terms of advancing technology is a group effort. It's nothing. None of it is by, one individual. It's by individuals operating together or operating in freedom, obviously. I think that was Einstein's, all the truly wonderful,
yes,
great things are the result of individuals operating, creating in freedom, or laboring in freedom, I think is what he said.
That's correct, yes.
But
one of the things I like to point out to people is that while rulership cycles, and every historian who, pays attention to such things has some idea of how to better define this cycle, but they all pretty well acknowledge that it happens. While rulership cycles, technology accretes. Technology keeps piling up, and we really lose very little over time and gain a ton. And we're in a real good position right now because of so many men and women of the past who have bequeathed to us so much knowledge, so much information, so many ideas on how to use it. We're still a long way from applying the information we have.
Right.
So we have a tremendous wealth in the area of technology.
Well, and that is very much to the point of where I was going with it. Yes, rulership cycles, you have empires rise and fall. But to the point of technology being knowledge leveraged against, our experience or our choices leveraged against the environment. The rest of the environment is that how are we organized according to what models?
Yes.
And I think aside from just finding ways to go around the existing aspect of rulership and all become pirates, as Ernie Hancock is pushing forward on helping Pirates Without Borders. I think that's is a wonderful concept. And it sounds like that's a lot of what you're talking about is you're talking about, well, how does this technology go forward? And I think that's great. I'm all for all of it. But I've been becoming more and more aware of the technology of how do we cooperate? What are the systems by which we use? What are the principles we have to hold in order to function in different systems? Like right. That's one of the things the United States. As flawed as the United States has been, it's moved forward largely because of holding certain principles in place that were based upon largely cultural orientations to make that possible. Now, as we get more diverse and intertangle our communications, those kind of cultural things really do break down. And so how do we go forward? And I just want to recommend that as an area that I'm definitely looking at, but something that would be that technology, you know, like what are the systems that we use to organize, which honor?
There I can help you.
Okay. Well, good.
Here's the thing. First of all, we need modes of cooperation that actually work freely, as they used to say, with low friction.
Right.
And the governance models that we have are absolutely almost the worst you can imagine, because they're hierarchical, they're enforced. In other words, if you don't do it, you're going to get in big trouble. We never think of it this way, but the fundamental statement of rulership is, do what we say or we're going to hurt you. And there's, you know, we do what we say because it's, you know, it's the right thing, but it's all backed by violence. And it's just the way it is. Whatever smooth words we use to describe it, that's the same system we've had pretty much from the Bronze Age. Now, I can tell you what works with low friction, and that's Bitcoin. And the fundamental right. component of it, which we generally call a blockchain, which is far from a perfect sort of system, depending how you want to apply it, but here's what it does. It scales trust with no middleman, with no boss or overseer who controls everybody's transactions, whose permissions you need, and of whom you must always be afraid. Bitcoin, blockchain, scales without limit, with no friction involved, with no permissions involved. It is a perfect engine for cooperation in a better system. Now, it's got its issues and it needs to be improved and all that. Yeah, fine, that's nice, but it works.
And how do we apply that in terms of many different aspects of life and living? And a lot of that has to do with shifting our own focus on what is, what we expect, what has been, and therefore what we expect to see next, which isn't necessarily going to happen.
Exactly right.
And
yes.
finding our ways through it. Well, cool. Well, that's good. That's a whole area that could be developed. I'm definitely putting my attention there in a couple of different directions. I'm going to be probing that further. But that leads me back to... See, I sent you the link to the podcast that I did recently about the midterm elections and so forth. And
right.
Well, I think we had some interesting things potentially to talk about there. You responded, it was a nice conversation. I do not, however, see politics as something to engage in. It might make an interesting conversation point. Yes, it does. In particular, we might talk about the political structure as carrier for technological change for human cooperation.
Right.
I wanted to clarify one thing on there. For anybody who hadn't listened to that podcast, I was looking at the midterm elections here in the U.S. through the lens of technology and choice, going and seeing all of. Actually, it was an unprecedented participation. There's all sorts of fur flying, lots of wild and crazy stuff going on. But my point was, I'm really happy to see people stepping up and participating, as opposed and including people like yourself and like a few others that I know who just say, well, I am not going to participate. They're asserting their choice to go, well, my vote is to not participate, as opposed to the apathy of the system, which has occurred in the past. So anyway, I don't know. I'm of mixed mind on all of this, but I thought it would be good to talk about, because we do have an ongoing process that we're involved in, and, you know, that has tank treads, and guns in motion, as well as weaponized money in motion. And we have to deal with it somehow. You know, participation or lack thereof seems to me to not be terribly optional one way or the other, but that it's important for us to come alive and go, okay, well, what are my choices and how am I going to cooperate and who am I going to cooperate with and so forth. Anyway, what do you think about all that?
Well, I think you're right. I think it's very important that people actually take a look around and make their own choices about what they want to do. The general problem, and I know I was victim of this for a long time, and lots of us have been, is that you kind of go by inertia, especially when you're young. You know, what do? Well, everyone else does it, so you know, you do it. They must be right. I mean, you know, my grandparents did it. My parents did it. They're good people. So it must be the thing to do, and you go ahead and you do it. Unfortunately, it's not usually the best thing to do. That's, you know, the system as it is, let's pick the United States because that's where we both are and we both know, and the others are fairly similar. It may not be the worst thing. North Korea, I think, is worse. clearly, several regimes in the past, like Stalin, were worse. But that doesn't mean that it's terribly good either. The American people are really pretty good folks. There's a lot of really good people who live here. The organizational scheme is not particularly good. Everybody, you can go anywhere and say, yeah, politicians are liars and thieves, and pretty much everybody's going to nod their head.
Right.
You know, any bus stop, you can say that. People pretty much are going to nod their head because it's true. And, you know, I look at the history of just in my lifetime. I can remember 50 some years ago, my mom and her friends were deeply involved in politics. And they were good people and meant well, and they really believed that politics was going to solve the problems. And the problems that they were very exercised about were, oh, let's see, education, war, the Middle East, bigotry, and welfare. And 50-some years later, what are the big problems? The same ones. It's the same problems, really. Nothing has, you know, there's been improvements here, improvements there. Questionable whether they're attributable to politicians fixing them.
Well, there's something going on in that mix that is intractable, definitely. To say it the best.
Yeah, and it's just they're all those people, and these are people who I knew and loved. They would have been better off gardening. They would have grown some nice food for the family and helped their neighbors and so on and so forth. Because if you look at the millions and millions of hours and billions of dollars that people put into politics every couple years, what's the payoff? They're giving their heart and soul and you know, hating the Blues or the Reds, whichever team they're not with, and just ungodly amounts of time and energy into all this for what?
Right.
It's the same thing.
I don't disagree. I don't disagree on that. And my position is not that hey, we just all need to do the expected,
right.
do anything different. But we do need to wake up and go, well, what is going on? And, you know, And I think there can be some discernment as to where participation is, a safety valve, and where it is, better to go off in another direction. We definitely shouldn't be dedicated to the old system, but you said something there that I wanted to go back to, which is you basically referred to, not by this name, but to social proof. Other people are doing it, and so that's probably the right thing to do.
Right.
And then you said it's usually not right. And I, boy, there's an awful lot of cases that that is the case, and the real important ones, a lot of it have to do with that. But I also kind of go, the alternative to that is we can't know everything about everything. And I think we should be very hesitant to just trash all the instincts, the agreements that are there, whether they're perfect or not, in order to...
Oh, well, I don't fundamentally disagree. The thing that's really important is for people to make conscious choices about these things as free moral agents upon this planet,
right,
rather than just following the stream and following the inertia. Now, you're right, you can't, you know, analyze everything and know everything and go through everything. But even when we don't, we should be aware of the fact that, okay, I haven't gone through this. I'm going to do it because probably my mom and dad were right. But, you know, one of these days I really should take a look at it.
Yeah,
and
well,
see myself.
That's really good, because that's my whole point, and that's why I harp on the point of technology and choice. It's like, and that, hey, you know, you do choose whether you make conscious choices or not. That's another factor. And whether you make the right choices or not, well, I can't always say that. But nonetheless, you do.
No one can.
You do. And, you know, the proof of it is when I say, hey, you go, huh? Well, you know, you're showing me that you're there.
Yes.
And therefore you choose. So if you can honor that in yourself and others, then we're kind of on the real playing field. I think that most simple,
yes,
thing gets lost. And that's why I'm such a kind of evangelist on this point. Not to...
Well, it's a crucial point. You're entirely correct.
Well, okay. Thank you. Thank you. You got me. I was kind of interviewing you, but it was an opportunity to get some of these things out, stated really clearly, because I've been definitely considering them. Wow.
You know, I think choice is so important. I would rather see people make wrong choices and still make a choice than have them follow blindly something that's right.
Well, this is the teenager's dilemma.
Yes,
hey,
I have to
assume my own choice, even if it's self-destructive, because it's more self-destructive to accept that I don't exist and that I have to do and that I'm compelled to do. I said, no, I'm going to assert myself. And I think that is, this teenage dilemma is a manufactured situation, I think.
Oh, to a very large extent it is. But this idea of individuation and that I must make my own choices is probably, it's difficult, but, you know, okay, fine. There's not a whole lot that isn't a little difficult on this planet. It's difficult, but it's necessary, because they have to learn how to make their own choices and to correct their choices when they're wrong. Otherwise, you're a neuter. You're a nothing. You're just a fish in the stream. And how good is that for a human future? Not very.
Right. So I assume, from knowing, having listened to you and knowing you, that all of the things that you're covering are working in that direction. And see, that is the common denominator I see of the people that I admire that are doing things in the world, is they're empowering people to make their choices rather than feeling like they have no choice. Because...
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
And that's where I get back to just continually thumping the most basic, simple thing that I can find is, well, you are, you choose. Whether you think you can or not, you do, you know.
Yes.
Let's say it's not a matter of whether, you know, you're given a choice or not. You always have it. It's not a matter of, you can't necessarily control everything. Maybe your ability to control is very, very tiny, but that's what technology is all about. That's what wisdom is. Wisdom is a form of technology. It's seeing the world in a way that leverages your ability to interact with it in a positive way. Anyway. You should be interviewing me.
Good.
So I'm really looking forward to your parallel society track. I don't want to abandon the point. Is there anything more we should interact with about, you know, dealing with the broader world with politics and everything? Because there's so much in terms of existing expectation and the leveraging of technology to focus our attention on probably useless paths very often.
In general, I think we're better off just separating and ignoring the system. There's so much noise in the system. You know, we talk about in communication signal to noise ratio. There's so much noise in this thing. The Reds hate the Blues. The Blues hate the Reds. You only get two candidates to pick from. The system is rigged. Alvin Toffler years ago called elections reassurance rituals. And, right. You know, really, that's what they are. And I just don't see the system really going into the future to any kind of good future. Here's why I say that is that right now we have known for 20 years or so how to grow more than enough food to feed every person on the planet, how to build enough roads and cars and houses to have everybody on the planet enjoy a nice, comfortable lifestyle. We know this. There's no question about it. There's plenty of resources. We know how to do it. The only problem is organization. And the organization has been, since the Bronze Age, these hierarchical states where you have one small group of people who make the rules that everybody else is forced to comply with, that put themselves at the center of every transaction with the right to overrule whatever you do in terms of in transactions, that takes half of every productive person's wages year by year, and then sends boys and girls off to die in wars against their competitors.
Sure,
this is the same system we've had since the Bronze Age with, you know, window dressing and changes here and there. But it's a horrible system for cooperation, and we can say this because we know how to feed everybody. We know how to clothe everybody. We know how to build enough houses and roads and cars and whatever else for everybody to live very nicely, and it doesn't happen. And this system of cooperation, which controls just about everything, has simply proven unsuitable to the job.
Well, I can't disagree with you on that score. So what this tells me is that the area of advancing technology that we really need to focus on, aside from all the physical handlings, because we actually have that pretty well in hand in terms of, like you say, we can produce the food and the, you know, has to do more with the technology of social interaction. And that kind of, I'm afraid that's going to have to get down to a philosophical level in order, because that really is the knowledge and wisdom. That's the technology we have to leverage in order to live together in harmony. It's not the physical options, though those can be arranged to help in that direction.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's interesting to talk about these terms, but what we really need is studies in the technologies of cooperation, taking cooperation as the ultimate goal and organizing everything else underneath it. Wouldn't that be an interesting course of studies?
Yes, it would. And I think another course of study is necessary to look at how do you uproot and subvert the grip of vested interests who want to keep it the old way, because they're there. You can't just go, okay, well, you do, but in order to do that to a large degree, I mean, you have to, persisting in that will help, definitely. If you keep that ideal there and just create around it, that is a good point, creating around that evil. But we also, it wouldn't hurt to actually deal with it as well when it's right there in your face. So I think those are areas.
There are certain times when you must.
Yeah, and I think all of that is all fair game for. But what I'm getting out of this whole conversation is, and hopefully the listeners will as well, is that it really is a matter of keeping an eye on the prize. And well, then what is the prize? And I think we very often forget to look at that when we're going forward with our various enthusiasms about advancing technology. A lot of times we do it because it's neat.
Right. It's fun and you know.
And that's good.
It's going really well. Yeah.
Nothing wrong with that. But in order for that to be really beneficial in the long run rather than potentially a source of maliciousness, because you know, we stand at a crossroads where we're empowering technology in ways that if we keep it centrally controlled, it could do some real damage. If we don't balance it and take responsibility individually and as figure out how to organize ourselves morally and ethically.
As I look at it, the real goal of all this is to allow life to function unhindered upon Earth in the universe. I mean, that's really when you come right down to it. It's really not, you know, I come from, I know a lot of people that are, you know, freedom, liberty, and all that stuff. Yeah, but what's the purpose of liberty?
Exactly.
The purpose of liberty is for life to, is for life to develop. It's for life to develop without hindrance. That's really, as far as I can see, the goal.
Right, and to developing without hindrance does not mean individual license. It means how to live in a world where you're dependent upon others choosing and the world itself already being going in a particular direction that you have to persuade it to do the right thing. Yeah,
or at least not have them forbid you to do things.
Well, that's part of the right thing.
Okay. Fair enough.
And that's why I keep going back to the simplicity of honoring self wherever you find it. And then you go, oh, well, that's in play. Hey, you know, I was looking at this, even in asserting, you know, force on others. If you look at it as, hey, you cut an errant toenail or you chop off a gangrenous toe. Not because you hate the toe, but because, you know, that's what's necessary. It works in society as well. It works in human interaction. So it doesn't even say, okay, let's all be nice. It requires that we all be cognizant of the fact that there's self in play everywhere. There is choice.
And there may be some rare occasion where you have to save life from another life.
Absolutely. And, you know, it may not be as rare as we think. And sometimes we're hiding from it. I know that's all. That goes down many different ways. But, well, good. Anything else you want to put on the table here before we end up? We're getting close to a good time.
You know, not really. It's been a great conversation. And I think that your I am statement, Rene Descartes would be really happy with you, by the way.
I don't go, I think, therefore I am. I don't know. I'm not sure. And beyond that, I'm not as certain as I once was.
Well, seriously,
it's a very, very powerful thing, and you become it's really interesting when you use certain truths you've learned to unseat things that you've always assumed to be true, like things about yourself. How do we improve as individuals? Well, we change the definitions of ourself. So self-defining. To a large degree. So who I am and what I am is far less important than focusing on that I am and others as well. That's
agreed.
Anyway, Paul, tell us about, just make it real clear. Anything you want to direct folks to in terms of your work and so forth.
Oh, certainly. Free Man's Perspective, just the way it sounds, freemansperspective.com is the newsletter and also the free articles. And we haven't talked about it, but my other company is called Crypto Hippie, CryptoHippie.com, and we provide a privacy service.
That's like industrial grade, right?
Not
necessarily for industry, but it's like serious privacy service.
Yeah, our guys are serious guys. It's, you know, it's way less than a buck a day, but it's, you know, it's a real privacy service.
Cool. Well, all right, I'll include those links in the show notes. Thank you so much. I'd look forward to talking to you again sometime in the future.
Sounds fun.